Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Simone Riscala, and you are listening to the Endow Podcast, a conversation not just about the feminine genius in general, but about cultivating your particular feminine genius through the Catholic intellectual tradition and intentional community. Well, hello, Endow ladies and friends. I'm here with Father John Henry Hansen. Hi, Father.
Good morning, Simone. Thank you for having me on again.
Oh, I'm so happy. The first time I had you on, we were just in the height of all the COVID craziness, and I think it was your first time on Zoom, so I felt very honored that the first person you talked to in the virtual world that has now become second nature to us. But if this is your first time encountering Father John Henry Hansen, Father is a priest with the Norbertines at St. Michael's Abbey in Southern California, and Father, you just got a new abbey. So do you want to just say a little bit about what's going on there, especially for our Southern California ladies?
Absolutely. So I am from St. Michael's Abbey. I'm a Norbertine priest, and we recently moved. I know it sounds funny to say we moved our monastery, but we, for the last several years, we've been in the process of building a new monastery about 8 miles from our former property, which was on El Toro Road. That property had been there since about 1962, and about 8 miles down the road, we built a new monastery, much larger, so that we can accommodate not only more priests and seminarians, but also more of the faithful who so enjoy coming to confession and praying with us and attending Mass. So we're now in this very beautiful monastery. Our church is not quite finished yet, but we're hoping to have it up and running by May. A number of the artisans can't come yet to complete the artwork because of the travel ban. So we're hoping they'll be able to get through and start on the mosaics and the paintings soon.
So exciting. I can't wait to see it, Father.
Well, you're most welcome to come. It's a really a beautiful thing. We're grateful to God for all the benefactors who made it possible.
Just incredible. Well, thank you for joining me today, Father, because we're going to talk about this controversial hot button issue of women priests. And this episode will be released. Probably it might be the Abbey might be open by then, because I'd like to release it, in May actually for, the month of Mary. And
yes,
particularly looking at, I mean, we're always in doubt looking at the feminine genius, but also on May 22nd, 1994, John Paul II released a document. I'm going to let you say it because you can pronounce the Latin better, Father.
Ordinatio sacerdotalis.
Ordinatio sacerdotalis. Nope, can't. I can speak Armenian and Arabic, but Latin, I struggle. So the reason why I wanted to have this conversation is sometimes I forget that this is still a real point of confusion. And for many Catholics, for many non-Catholics, and also for many women who consider themselves faithful daughters of the magisterium and the church, but don't understand kind of where, what the church teaches about this. And just recently I encountered a group of people who I would say were very devout Catholics, still were very, very confused. And when I talked to them about what I do and endow and cultivating the feminine genius, their first instinct was to talk about female deacons and about female priests. And my heart sank a little bit because through no fault of their own, they just hadn't really been catechized and taught what the church teaches about this. So Father, why can't we, well, can we have women priests, ordained women priests?
Okay. Well, I think we have to back up on the question a bit, because there is a context to it.
Yes.
I mean, if you just want yes or no answers, the answer is no, but that's not, it doesn't give you the full background of what we're really talking about here. It's like almost asking, why can't women be, you know, president of the United States? Well, they can, they just haven't been elected yet, or, you know, something like that. So we're not talking about politics, and we're not talking about a career. We're not talking about anything that a man or woman could do. We're talking about what Christ has revealed to us, what he has taught us, and the whole context of salvation history. You mentioned before we went live about the common baptismal priesthood, which everybody who is baptized shares in. And that goes back to Exodus, where God tells the people through Moses, you are a priestly people. You know, in other words, you are a holy nation. And St. Peter also repeats that in one of his epistles, that you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood. And what this means is that we are all, by our baptism, elevated to a status of tremendous holiness. And we shouldn't minimize that. The demands of holiness that are placed on us are the highest that could possibly be, because we are called truly to image Christ to the world. And we are called to reproduce in our lives the life of Christ in our own life. And that goes across the board for everybody. And you notice that in both of those biblical contexts, to be a priest equals holiness. Okay, yeah. It equals holiness. You are priestly people simply means you are consecrated, set apart, and you are to be holy. Okay, so going into the New Testament, Christ as our Redeemer is coming out of the whole Old Testament context where God is the bridegroom of his people. When he comes, John the Baptist even speaks of him as the bridegroom, right? The bride is for the bridegroom. And our Lord refers to himself in that way as well. Even the parable of the 10 virgins, the wise and the foolish virgins, where they are waiting for the coming of the bridegroom. So looking at Christ's self-revelation, his self-explanation, he is clearly that husband, that bridegroom that has been prophesied throughout the entire Old Testament and through the prophets, especially through Isaiah. So there is a sacramental imaging of Christ, you might say, that a male priesthood better conveys. And I should pause there to say that we are talking about spiritual things, by the way. You know, we live in a very materialistic culture where if somebody can do something, they ought to be able to do it. And the church doesn't operate in that way. We are the mystical body of Christ. We are dealing with sacramental and spiritual realities, which, as St. Paul says, cannot be understood by those of a carnal mind. Mm-hmm. Only those who have a spiritual mind can understand this. So if we look at the priesthood only in terms of what a priest does materially, that is celebrating Mass and hearing confessions, all those things, a woman could do that just in the same way, right? It's not a matter of a woman cannot stand at the altar, a woman cannot, you know, anoint, cannot do these things. So we're not talking about you just can't do that because you don't have the skill set to do that. We're talking about something which is very spiritual. We're talking about the mystical imaging of Christ as bridegroom.
Yeah.
As even Adam was the priest, the primordial priest in the Garden of Eden, right? And Eve has always been seen as a representative of the church. I think one of the things that could be very helpful for anybody who doesn't quite see this is to think about consecrated women or consecrated virgins and how they so beautifully image the beloved of Christ, the image of the church, the bride for whom the bridegroom lays down his life. When we see a nun, when we see a consecrated woman, we're not thinking like, well, how come she can't do this? How come she can't? There is a dignity there of being the beloved of Christ. And it's, again, we're not talking about material things.
Yes.
We're not materialists. We're looking at these things in spiritual terms. If we look at it in any other way, it doesn't make sense.
Yes, and I think that's what I appreciate so much about what you're saying, because you went right to the depth of the spiritual reality, right? And I think for so many faithful, I mean, it's almost good enough to just know, well, tell me just what the rules are, right? So John Paul II in that document I won't pronounce right now, close that case, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd like to read segments of it, just, you know, maybe in a little bit, about, you know, just making that very, very clear that for those who are faithful Catholics, it's enough to understand that, like, this question has been closed, that the church actually can't change this teaching. As John Paul II said, I can't change things. I'm a guardian of truth.
Exactly. Yeah. Now. Yeah.
And that Jesus instituted a male only priesthood, and we follow him and his church out of obedience. But what you're hitting on, which is the more interesting conversation, right? Which is why all those things that I just mentioned are true, is that we aren't. And I love that you put it into materialism versus and utilitarianism versus spirituality, because we do look at things in a utilitarian way, in a practical way, in a materialistic way. Can women do a priest's job and maybe even better? And sometimes, oh, sure. But if we're moving away from occupation to vocation, then it's a vocation that men are being called to distinctly from women.
Yes, that's a very good distinction to make, occupation versus vocation, and in fact, a career. When we speak of a vocation, we're talking about something that originates with God. It's not something that comes from the individual. That is very, very key, because any kind of ministry or service in the church must come from God. It cannot be, I think I'm supposed to do this, or even I have a right. A man who enters the seminary, even a man who enters the seminary, doesn't have a right to continue throughout. I mean, you have a long period of formation, and I am a superior, as a matter of fact, in our seminary. And if there comes a point at which you see that God's not calling this person, or there are other obstacles, then they leave, and you are even sometimes told to do that. Okay, so even among men, we have to discern the vocation. We have to discern a divine call, which, even if somebody has a subjective certainty, it doesn't mean it's objective, you know, because sometimes that does happen. And you might have a certain push to go into the seminary, but at that point, now we open up the church's discernment on that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you suitable? Is there a call? And so on and so forth. So we're not talking about the sphere of rights. We're talking about something that is coming from the Lord, chooses whom he will. In the Epistle to the Hebrews, St. Paul says about Christ that not even he took the priesthood upon himself. Mm. Interesting. And I think that's in chapter 4. But it was given to him by the incarnation, because you can only be a priest if you are man. Okay. So not even Christ took it upon himself. So who are we to make demands on God?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so
it's a very un-Catholic thing. So it's a little bit strange when there are, beyond just ignorance, but almost like this kind of claiming rights attitude with the church. It's a very un-Catholic thing, because to be a Catholic is actually to say, oh, I submit myself to the Father's will ultimately. And so on a natural level, if you're not a man, I mean, this goes back, even going even more context. I mean, two sexes were created with distinct gifts.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So that's even prior to Jesus instituting a male priesthood, but obviously it's all part of the plan, but that there are distinct gifts of the masculine genius and a distinct gifts of the feminine genius. And those distinct gifts
are beautiful.
And so it always kind of bums me out a little bit, because I like having beautiful philosophical abstract conversations, and the role of occupation is so much less interesting to me than the role of vocation. And it's one that Edith Stein, I think, definitely felt, because, you know, she was always asked, can women do men's jobs? And she's like, well, sure. But how they do them as women, that is the interesting question.
It's very different, because
very, very different. Yes.
The differences between men and women go far beyond biology.
Yes.
And that's something that we all know intuitively. Nobody has to explain that to you.
Yes.
But sometimes it's good to reiterate that there are differences willed by God, which are enriching and beautiful. And as St. Paul says, not every member of the mystical body has the same function. Right. Not the eyes are not the hands and the hands are not the feet and so forth. And he says, so it is with Christ. We all have a different part to play. And as Saint Therese of Lisieux said, our part, speaking as a woman and as a consecrated woman, our part is very beautiful. We have nothing to envy in priests, she said. Okay. We have nothing to envy because what God has called us to is perfect for us, is beautiful for us.
Yes. And it feels almost offensive when the conversation goes there, because I think, well, isn't the feminine genius already so stunning as it is?
I think it is. But also, what is the message behind the talk about women in holy orders? It's almost to say, you're not good enough as you are.
Yes.
What you have to offer is just not good enough unless you can do everything that a man can do in the church. I beg to differ. And working as I do a lot with consecrated women and other very devout women like yourself, I can see that clearly, that you have so many great gifts to offer, and you're offering them in a way that is so fruitful, in a way that a man can't. And I admire, but I don't envy.
Yeah.
I admire, I thank God for it, but I don't envy, because I know God has given me gifts to give as well.
I love that. How do we move the conversation in church circles away from a materialistic worldview or an ego drama, as Balthazar would say, to the theodrama? How can we help that, help move that conversation? Because I find myself pretty impatient. I need to grow in charity. Where I go, we have to have this conversation about how deaconesses again and priests. Can't we get to the good stuff about what the feminine genius is?
I think, Simone, to be honest, I think it has to do with what country you live in. These are the question of women in holy orders comes when you have... When you've grown bored with your faith, when you're not engaged by it anymore. We're living in a very prosperous country. In the States here, or in other prosperous Western countries, people have the time to be thinking about these things. If you go to Africa or India, they would find this topic of conversation ridiculous.
Yes. Oh, that's so feeling to think about, right?
Yeah. It's only we have this as kind of a preoccupation. Our media, whenever the media mentions the church, it's usually, something regarding the priesthood. They don't understand celibacy or why women care. And that's all that there is about the Catholic Church, right?
But
in other parts of the world where maybe they don't have the material advantages that we have, they're actually living their faith in a radical way. Like in the Middle East,
to be
a Christian in the Middle East, you don't have time to be speculating about these kinds of things. You're living your faith in very hostile circumstances sometimes, or in Africa or other parts of the world. So I think it's good to keep in mind that this is not a universal question that's, filling everybody's mind.
Right.
It's people who have the extra time and the boredom, really, the boredom.
And I think there is something about the Western world that is so anti motherhood in a way.
No, absolutely, it is.
So if you see motherhood as less than instead of such an incredible quality of the feminine genius, then you're gonna see your life as a woman through
materialistic eyes, right?
Eyes and masculine criteria. Oh my goodness, Father, this was so horrible. I was watching a documentary on Simone de Beauvoir.
Okay.
And who, people may or may not know was tied to Sartre and French atheistic existentialism, and was pro-abortion and pro-pedophilia and just all these like horrible, horrible things. And then I remembered when I was in high school and didn't know anything about anything. Of course, her name is Simone, like mine. So I thought, let me quote her on my yearbook. And I put in there, Simone is not, one is not her famous quotation. One is not born a woman, one becomes one. And me, in my Catholic lens, thought, oh, that's so beautiful. It's about virtue. It's about, you're not just born in this beautiful feminine genius and nobility. You must cultivate it through the virtue. Yeah. That's what I thought. I put it in my yearbook. And then watching this documentary recently and hearing all of the philosophical understanding of what she really meant when she wrote that about complete self-determination and that you could be a man if you wanted, you could be a woman if you wanted, gender fluidity, all the things that we struggle with now in our culture. I thought, oh no, young Simone was so led astray by that question. But I think her thinking and her legacy of really seeing a woman through the lens of man was really quite sad.
Yes. And I would think also anybody who's deeply influenced by Marxism applies what Marx applied to the economic sphere to biology, even, Marx would say that there are inevitable historical cycles where economics becomes a certain thing at a certain point, and the end point is communism, right? And that kind of materialist way of looking at the economy sometimes translates into how we see humanity as well. Like there are these inevitable movements. There is always this kind of a progress toward a different state of being.
Yes.
And for us currently, it's that you can somehow manipulate.
Yes.
Male and female. You can choose to be a woman if you're a man.
Yes.
Or vice versa, or whatever it might be. And that's simply false. Your biology is not everything about you, but it does tell you something very fundamental about your makeup as a man or a woman. What's so wrong with embracing the goodness of that? Why rebel against it? Why do we heap praise on people, or we at least tolerate people who think that that's such a great idea to turn against what you've got?
Yes, and it is actually our culture, at least American culture, Western culture, always talks about like self-acceptance. But in fact, when you buy into those ideologies, it is exactly, ironically, the opposite of self-acceptance, because you are denying even your biology about who you are. And I thought the tie-in with Marx is so important. Like, we don't, as Catholics, define ourselves as economic objects or subjects.
Right.
Our identity.
Consumers, right? Consumers.
Consumers, yes. We are, and what we can produce. But I mean, it's the most liberating, the gospel is the most liberating message in the world, and that my identification comes entirely by identifying with Jesus Christ. What's freer than that?
That is the ultimate game changer. I am called to be Christ in my own state of life.
Yes.
According to how he calls me to do that, not so much as I choose it, but as he calls me to it.
Yes. Yes. So for women and men who listen, so thanks to the men who listen, we know that all men and women, as you mentioned earlier, are common priests. They're called to be set apart by God as priests, prophets, and kings. And the interesting thing for me and for Endow Women is that what does that priestly, prophetic, kingly role look like as
for a woman? Yeah.
Now that's the conversation I want to have, right? That's the conversation I want to have in Catholic circles. I don't want to have the conversations about occupation. I want to have the conversations about
right.
And I want to have the conversation beyond the feminine genius and beyond, the universal call to holiness and all that. I want to talk about your personal vocation as the woman in front of me that I'm talking to. That to me is the most exciting thing with my girlfriends, with just women in the church and people I encounter. What is your personal vocation? That to me is the most fascinating conversation, because it's your subjective expression of the feminine genius.
Absolutely. And I think in our culture, if we have turned away, put it this way, as soon as you turn away from God as your ultimate end, and as soon as you stop looking at this life as a preparation for heaven, and that your eternal salvation depends on your choices in this life. As soon as you turn away from that, everything's up for grabs.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, as again, you know, especially in our country, you get bored with your own existence and you start manipulating it. In one way or another, like, you know, I'm bored being a man. It's not good enough to be a man. I want to try something else, or it's not good enough to be a woman. I have to try something else. My goodness, what an underappreciation. I mean, why write yourself a bad script?
Right.
We tend to be, you know, focusing on all these things. And as you're saying, we're not looking at the things that are really important, like, you know, positively, how can I bear fruit for Christ in my life? You know, that's the thing. Those are the things we should be talking about, and not deciding, am I a man or am I a woman? You know, but rather, I am a man. Let's get to work. Let's bear fruit for the Lord. Pour ourselves out in love.
Have fun in that, and have fun with that. I mean,
and have fun.
When I hear priest, prophet, king, I mean, just right now in this moment of talking to you as a woman, I'm thinking, okay, king. For me, that's queen. Who doesn't want to be a queen? What girl doesn't want to be a queen? So I get to participate in ordering the world, right? Whatever kingly, queenly, priestly, right? That's ordering the world. That is so interesting. You know, how am I going to take what was in front of me in the environment and order it to beauty and to goodness? Prophetic, right? Okay, we can have conversations. And I love having conversation about theology of gossip, and because it's it's a horrible thing. But the opposite of gossip is like proclaiming the prophetic, life of the Spirit into people's lives, like breathing this, like you said, helping others, like breathe the truth into their lives, help be God's prophetic word to them, help them pick up that pen and start rewriting that script along with God. This is the interesting life of a Christian. And this is the interesting conversations that I think I want to have more of. So anyway, just wanted to share all that. And I think for a lot of women, it is very difficult. In modernity is very, very difficult to, because I think a lot of times for the feminine genius, the priestly, I mean, yes, the sacrifice of motherhood, I think that's very, very obvious. And spiritual motherhood too, as you were mentioning, like all the beautiful consecrated women out there, and just the way that we care about in a unique feminine way, the relationships in our lives and so forth. But I think also in trying to support the masculine genius, a lot of the sacrifice we have to make is allowing men to be men. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that means like not exactly the way, things being executed in the way that you wish for them to be executed, but for the sake of the masculine genius, I think that's important. So I think a lot of the sacrifice, you know, going back to our conversation, the material versus the spiritual, is like allowing the spiritual sacrifice of like, it doesn't have to be my way.
Right.
And I can, right. I can receive, I can be led.
And especially after the original sin, this is how Adam and Eve sanctify each other by accommodating themselves to each other, by giving each other space, and by correcting each other too. Because sometimes as a man or as a woman, you think, I see things as they truly are. I don't know what her problem is, but you know, I have perfect, you know, clarity of vision. I can see everything. Or vice versa. How come he won't change in all the ways that I think he should change, you know? Yes. Whereas there's supposed to be a meeting there. There's supposed to be a compromise and accommodation where in that process, we perfect our masculinity or femininity. We purify it also of the bad parts that are there too, the selfishness and the need to make others change and conform to ourselves.
Yes.
Whereas we are made as men and women to serve each other and to pour ourselves out for each other. And so that kind of a dynamic that you're describing is exactly that. You know, I have to change myself to accommodate a woman, and a woman has to change to accommodate a man. And you end up going back ever so slightly to Eden, the way it was, where there was that initial harmony, where I see the goodness God has put in you. And you see the goodness in me, and it's good, and it's to be rejoiced over.
Yes.
As a gift.
Amazing. I love that you brought Eden in, because I like to imagine, I think about Eve a lot pre-fall. Like, she did a perfect husband.
She did.
And then having the history of like, oh, wow, like, he didn't really struggle with these things before, but now he does. And I didn't struggle with these things before. Now I do. I mean, we've always had this kind of broken context, but they remembered a time when that was not true. And so.
Can you imagine? No.
I don't, but I like to. Place myself in there and try to imagine, but I can't. Oh, it's so interesting. Well, Father, let me read, if you don't mind, let me read just a little bit of John Paul II from
Ordinatio Sacerdotalis.
Thank you.
Which is a very brief text anyway. It's about 2 pages long.
It is. So I'll link it. Actually, that's a good idea, Father. I'll link it to this episode in case anybody wants to go through it. But just for clarity's sake, I will read just the end paragraphs. Although the teaching that priestly ordination is to be reserved to men alone has been preserved by the constant and universal tradition of the Church and firmly taught by the Magisterium in its more recent documents, at the present time, in some places, it is nonetheless considered still open to debate, or the Church's judgment that women are not to be admitted to ordination is considered to have a merely disciplinary force. Wherefore, in order that all doubt may be removed regarding a matter of great importance, a matter which pertains to the Church's divine constitution itself, in virtue of my ministry of confirming the brethren, I declare that the Church has no authority whatsoever to confer priestly ordination on women, and that this judgment is to be definitively held by all the Church's faithful. Invoking an abundance of divine assistance upon you, venerable brothers, and upon all the faithful, I impart my apostolic blessing. And this was May 22nd. Pentecost in 1994. Way to go, JP2. Way to go. Well, Father, before we say goodbye this morning, anything else we should add to this conversation?
Well, I think what Endow has to offer is all of those three gifts we're given in on our baptism. That is the priestly, the priestly and the prophetic character, or the priestly and the prophetic ministry. So I see. I forget to say kingly or queenly, but what I mean to say is that you are exercising a type of prophecy here by proclaiming the truth of the gospel, especially as directed to women. And I think that's a very important thing. So how the priesthood and the kingship and the prophecy applied to you, I think, is coming across very well here and reaching a lot of souls in a very powerful way. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Father. And if you don't know, Endow women are always given a priest prayer card with every Endow book and study. So we're praying for our priests, and we love our priests, and we love you, Father. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Simone.
If this episode was helpful for you, please consider sharing it with a friend or two. We would also appreciate it so much if you left a rating and review so that more women can discover Endow and our mission to help women cultivate their unique feminine genius. Please also check out the link below to learn how to become a monthly donor to help defray podcast production costs. And, of course, if you'd like to talk to me about joining or starting your own Endow group, please email me at simone.rascala@endowgroups.org. And remember, you are the heart of Endow.